track 15. Our final piece is an article from Norfolk Past Lives, and this month two Norfolk greats are looked at. First, Brothers in Arms. As we commemorate the fallen of all wars this Remembrance Sunday, A.P. Curtis tells the story of two outstandingly courageous Norfolk brothers.
On the walls of an ancient school in Norwich, a pair of names is recorded in two separate locations. They exist in solemn juxtaposition to each other in a panelled former classroom. The names are to be seen on the boards which list the school prefects of 1919 and 1925, respectively. Down a flight of stairs, through a small narrow doorway, is the school chapel. On the north wall, the names are now next to each other, cut into stone, memorialised alongside other pupils who died in the Second World War. The names belong to Derek and Hugh Seagrim. The countryside can have a profound effect on people. It forms a home which cannot easily be left behind, and for those who might venture elsewhere, exerts a pull which cannot easily be ignored. For some, the countryside evokes memories of a childhood idyll which must be returned to after a spell in the city or abroad. For others, it would be anathema to bring up a family too far from the fields, woods, and streams that are woven together into a priceless fabric. For a few, however, a rural upbringing is the preparation for something more extraordinary, an environment which equips them for groundbreaking travel or extreme exploration, and on the rarest occasions it inculcates the qualities needed for incredible acts of bravery and valour. There can be no finer case of this phenomenon than that of two brothers who were born in the Edwardian era, Derek and Hugh Seagrim. After a magical childhood in North Norfolk, they grew up to become the only siblings ever to be awarded Britain's highest decorations for courage, the Victoria Cross and the George Cross. Derek and Hugh were two of five brothers born to the Reverend Charles Seagrim and his wife, Amabel. Charles was the rector of Wissenset with Horningtoft, a pair of parishes nestled in the Wensum Valley, 20 miles northeast of Norwich. Their sons grew up, like many clergy children, in refined but impecunious surroundings, a freezing cavernous rectory with an extensive garden, in and beyond which they could run wild. As the boys grew older, they took advantage of their father's want to accumulate animals. There were cows, pigs and fowl, an ill-judged present bought by Charles for his wife, that of a parrot, added some colour. There were also two ponies tethered on the glebe, which enabled the boys to learn to ride and later hack out in the mellow, gently undulating countryside that surrounds the village. The river provided ample opportunity for sailing and fishing, and in due season there was rough shooting. Ian Morrison, who penned the most famous account of Hugh Seagrim's exploits, Grandfather Longlegs, in 1947, captures this bucolic upbringing. To the outsider's eye, they lived buried in the country, but the outsider rarely knows how intensely full and varied and satisfying is the life that goes on in small communities like Wissenset. Derek and Hugh were sent to board at King Edward VI School, happily situated in the Cathedral Close in Norwich. Derek was enormously well respected as a first-rate games player and school prefect. On one occasion, he earned himself local distinction by leading his fellow pupils to safety when the school caught fire. Hugh's conduct was not always exemplary, and the temptation for mischief-making could not always be resisted. In revenge for a caning, he contrived to dangle a bar of soap out of his dormitory window in order to tap on the window of a meddlesome matron below. She took it to be a ghost and fled in horror. When the time came to leave the school, it was the army that beckoned and solved the conundrum of obtaining a respectable profession for those without sufficient means. Derek was first to attend the Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst, and he then commissioned into the Green Howards. Successive overseas postings followed: Jamaica, then Palestine, China, and Hong Kong. When the war started, he served as an air liaison officer in East Africa and was a staff officer during the Greek campaign. In October 1942, he took command of 7th Battalion, the Green Howards. Morrison comments further that Derek had a marvellous capacity for mixing with the men in his battalion on the easiest terms, and yet at the same time retaining their respect. Who can tell to what extent a Norfolk village upbringing gave him this touch? He certainly led from the front. During the Battle of Wadi Akrit, on the night of March the 20th, 21st, 1943, Derek's battalion was engaged in a ferocious firefight with German forces. Its mission was to capture an important objective at the Marath Line. When he realised that, due to the weight of enemy fire, the attack might fail, he placed himself at the very front of his men, crossing an anti-tank ditch and personally assaulting two machine gun posts, killing 20 enemy soldiers. His courage was such that one of his captains recalled Seagram just strolling around as if he was on the parade square. His leadership and courage enabled the battalion ultimately to achieve its objective. But Derek sustained injuries from which he later died. His Victoria Cross citation reads, "By his valour, disregard for personal safety, and outstanding example, he so inspired his men that the battalion successfully took and held its objective, thereby enabling the attack to proceed. Lieutenant Colonel Seagram subsequently died of wounds received in action." He was posthumously awarded the nation's highest decoration for action in the face of the enemy and is buried in Sfax War Cemetery. Hugh Seagram commissioned into the Indian Army, initially joining the Highland Light Infantry before being posted to the 1st 20th Burma Rifles. It was while serving in Southeast Asia that schoolboy pranks developed into what was considered by his contemporaries as full-blown eccentricity. During periods of leave, he shunned colonial life at the club and on the polo pitch in favour of solitary expeditions into the Himalayas and Japan. Later, he hiked into the remote uplands of Burma and befriended the hill people who lived there. Philip Davis's erudite and moving biography of Hugh Seagram, Lost Warriors, illuminates Hugh's capacity to assimilate and imbibe the culture of a foreign country. Like many British officers commanding native troops, whether Gurkhas, Jats, Sikhs or Pathans, Seagram developed a deep bond with the Karens in his company. He astonished his tutors by mastering spoken Burmese in just 5 weeks, his linguistic expertise doubtless aided by his dyslexia, which forced him to memorise facts and information. It was undoubtedly Hugh's willingness to engage with the soldiers he commanded, to learn about their culture, and, moreover, accustom himself to the terrain of the country that inclined men to follow him. He was interested in the folk he met and formed genuine and caring relationships with them. His regard was dependent on neither rank nor status, the legacy, perhaps, of playing sport for the local team and mucking in with village life in Norfolk. Hugh's individuality and comfort with solitude were well suited to operating behind enemy lines. When the Japanese invaded Burma in 1942, he volunteered to remain behind in occupied territory, an offer which those in command gladly accepted. he raised an irregular force of indigenous people, mainly from ethnic groups, the Karen. The group went on to mount highly dangerous insurgency operations against a brutal and merciless enemy. Hugh led small detachments which engaged in guerrilla warfare against the Japanese, whilst all the time living in the jungle in the most primitive conditions. The bravery he exhibited through such consistently hazardous work was acknowledged with a Distinguished Service Order and MBE. But his success at disrupting the enemy had grave unintended consequences. So enraged were the Japanese that they could neither confront this mythical figure nor thwart his sabotage, that they made it clear they would execute Karen civilians each day until he gave himself up. This atrocity, which was duly carried out, exerted too strong a grasp on Hugh's conscience, and he marched into a village to demand that they stop. Despite his capture, this was far from the end of Hugh's campaign. Whilst he was imprisoned in Rangoon jail, he continued to lead and encourage his co-conspirators until the very end. The citation for his George Cross reads, "Major Seagram pleaded that the others be excused, since they had to obey his orders, and that he alone should suffer the death sentence. Throughout his sojourn in jail, he made every effort to comfort his men and sustain their courage by his Christian example. There can hardly be a finer example of self-sacrifice and bravery than that exhibited by this officer, who in cold blood gave himself up to save others." Although Major Seagram requested a solitary execution, his men had such love for him that they chose to share his death. Ultimately, he died with the people he loved. It would be all too easy to focus on the undeniable tragedy of these brothers. They fought and died in a war which was not of their making and were buried thousands of miles away from each other and far from home. It's possible, though, to take another perspective which provides some comfort and inspiration. A good deal has been written about both men, but none fully acknowledges the role the countryside may have played in forging their characters. Derek and Hugh Seagram were outstanding leaders of men and had the ability to inculcate courage in others. This stemmed from cheerfully participating in village life and following their father's Christian example of loving their neighbours as themselves. Both were exceptional soldiers. They knew their enemy and adopted the right tactics to outwit him. Pottering about on walked-up shoots taught them covert observation, stealth, and when to attack. They coped in extreme desert and jungle environments and, simply put, slogged on when the odds were stacked against them. Winters spent shivering in a drafty rectory and herring barefoot around the clay fields baked dry by the sun, no doubt instilled a certain robustness and resilience which ran deep. There is a third place where the names of the Seagram brothers are recorded, in the hymn book of their alma mater. Here their memory is kept alive when read out each year at the school remembrance service by a current prefect. Two Norfolk brothers, remembered for their gallantry, yes, but hopefully also as country boys and for all the qualities and character that such an upbringing gave them both. A.P. Curtis teaches history at Norwich School and writes on history, principally the 20th century and the countryside.